I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about drugs, the illegal ones. We're going to talk about the drugs that are being used more frequently and the damage they do and can do to the people who use them. I'll be joined for this discussion by three guests: Nikki Crawford with the Indiana State Police, Tammy Watson, a trooper with the Indiana State Police, and Rachel Botkin, a Fairbanks Hospital nurse practitioner. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We look forward to talking with you. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about current drug trends, and I'm fortunate to have as guests three people who deal with this from different points and different perspectives, starting with Nikki Crawford, who is a first sergeant with the Indiana State Police. Nikki, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having us. We appreciate the time.
It's good to have you here. Tammy Watson, who is a trooper with the Indiana State Police. Tammy, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. We look forward to this.
It'll be fun. And Rachel Botkin, who is a Fairbanks Hospital nurse practitioner. Rachel, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'll start with Nikki on this one. What is the biggest drug problem in the state of Indiana right now?
Well, I think you have to look at it from a couple of different perspectives. If you look at it in terms of funds that law enforcement are spending in terms of providing the investigations and following up on the investigations, that would probably be meth labs, methamphetamine production. But very close behind that would be both heroin and prescription drug abuse.
And the meth labs have been in the pole position for several years now, right?
They have been, yes.
In terms of where are the areas that we're seeing the most growth that are creating that came out of nowhere?
I don't know. Well, I would say in central Indiana, the county that kind of came out of nowhere in the last couple of years was Madison and Delaware County. They have had a significant growth in the number of clandestine labs that they have seized in those counties. Our top 10 over the past 5 years or so have stayed fairly steady with those two exceptions.
And Tammy, your perception, and since you're actually out there dealing with this right now, what do you see as the biggest problem?
Well, my current assignment is a legislative liaison, so I work in the legal section, and I work with the legislature. And when you mentioned what is one of our biggest problems, synthetic drugs right now are such a struggle for law enforcement.
Probably ought to define for people, and one of the things I've noticed in conversations about drugs is we tend to speak in metaphors, you know, the classic example being the ad where they said, this is your brain, and this is your brain on drugs, and they drop the egg into the frying pan. At some point, I want to talk, and Rachel, I'm going to lean on you for this, to talk in more clinical and precise terms about exactly what drug use does to people. But when we talk about synthetic drugs, what are we talking about, Tammy?
Well, and Rachel may be able to help me out with this also, being from the medical field, but a synthetic drug is a drug commonly known in this area as either bath salts or spice. Spice will mimic marijuana, and it is synthetic, which means it's man-made.
Mm-hmm.
Bath salts are the same thing. When I say bath salts, I'm not talking about something you're going to put in your bath and soak in. Both of these types of drugs are being used for human consumption, but labeled, marketed, and advertised as not for human consumption. So Right now, that's one of our biggest challenges in law enforcement, is attempting to combat these two substances. I will tell you that at the end of the last legislative session, which wrapped up about a month ago, Senate Bill 536 is currently the most aggressive language against combating synthetic drugs that we see right now in the nation.
What did that bill do?
We can thank Senator Merritt and Representative Milo Smith for working tirelessly for about 2 years now on this issue. And what that bill does is it brings the look-alike definition that we currently use with any other drug. Mm-hmm. If I sell you oregano and I tell you that this is marijuana, you believe it's marijuana, you pay me for marijuana, you're charged as if that were marijuana under the look-alike statute.
So you don't necessarily have to have possession of an illegal substance.
Exactly. If you believe that what you are buying from me is marijuana, and I tell you that it's marijuana, even though it is not, we have in Indiana a look-alike statute, and that statute covers those scenarios. So it makes that a crime.
I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but does it cut the other way, too?
That's what we've done with the synthetic drug bill.
That if somebody sells you marijuana and you thought it was oregano, is that
doesn't go
that
way. I don't think you could try that as a defense. I'm not an attorney, but you could try that one.
Okay.
And I'm sure it's been tried.
I mean, you obviously would have to have some sort of paper trail or something defending.
Well, what we've done is we've used that in reverse on the synthetic drug bill. We've taken the look-alike statute, which is, in my opinion, a brilliant thing to do for these two senators to work this out. We've been able to tell commercial establishments that I don't care what you call it, salts, spice, whatever you want to call it, if it is a synthetic drug, regardless of what name you're selling it under, it is a crime.
And Rachel, I want to, in terms of dealing with people who have substance problems, substance abuse problems, where do you see the greatest growth?
Right now, opiate abuse is one of the biggest things that we see. A lot of heroin, a lot of prescription drug abuse, as far as like Vicodin, Percocet, Oxycontin, things like that. And then she was also talking about the synthetics. That's also big with the adolescent population. See a lot of spice and bath salt use with them because it's readily available. You can get it at head shops, stuff like that. So those are our two biggest things. And we were also talking about methamphetamines. We see that as well. But we also see that as like more with the polysubstance abuse.
Is a polysubstance?
Polysubstance abuse means that you're abusing, you're also abusing marijuana, alcohol, benzos, things like Xanax, Klonopin, things like that.
So it means that you've got multiple substance abuse
problems. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And how do you treat people who are, you know, what is the treatment? I don't mean how, I'm presuming that you're nice and polite because
of course we're kind of person, very nice and polite. It depends.
In the medical sense.
From the medical sense, we give them medications to get them through their detox, to keep them safe, to keep them comfortable. It depends on their drug of choice. Alcohol and opiates get different drugs for their specific drug of choice, and they get 12-step, you know, things like that, group therapy, educational classes, but as far as that, we do medically manage their detox with specific medications tailored to their drug of choice.
We are talking about current drug trends, current illegal drug trends, I probably ought to emphasize here, on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Rachel, I'm going to stay with you for a second. You know, we spend an awful lot of time and attention emphasizing that drugs are bad. And as I said a few minutes ago, we tend to make that a metaphoric, you know, we try to do a visual or whatever. Could you talk specifically about why some of these, what some of these drugs do to people, why they are bad, in as precise terms as you can?
Okay. Well, methamphetamines, for example, what those do, it's a central nervous system stimulant. So what that does is it makes you up. So you're awake for several days, which is, you know, several days without sleep is very detrimental to your body. It increases your blood pressure, which can cause heart damage, kidney damage, liver damage, brain damage. It can also make you psychotic and put you into a psychotic episode, which can cause criminal behavior. It can cause you to injure other people. I know we all heard about the person in Florida who was on the bath salts, which have similar side effects as meth. There's that with the methamphetamines, spice use. There's been a lot of emergency room visits for the spice because you don't know what's in there as the additives. So we've seen a lot of kids who've gone into respiratory distress and required intubation and extended hospitalizations because of the additives in spice, and they don't know what's in there. So there's that side of that. And then with the bath salts as well, there's been a lot of poison control calls because of the bath salts, again, psychosis, strokes, death, paranoia with that, the opiates, long-term use of opiates. The thing with the opiates is it can cause respiratory distress. First time you overdose or first time you use, you can overdose and cause death. Things like that with the opiates.
We're talking about illegal drugs here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Rachel's given us, I think, a pretty good description of why this is bad, you know, why we should make personal choices not to indulge in this sort of behavior. I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a moment to engage the law enforcement side and say, okay, you know, my life, my body, you know, if I want to ruin it, I can. And there are other ways to do it that are perfectly legal. I can do that with alcohol. I can do that with cigarettes. I can do that with other things. What are the consequences? Why is law enforcement involved? Why is controlling meth in particular important to law enforcement?
I think it's all of the subsequent things that come with it. Obviously, people are using these substances and they're making a personal choice for themselves. The problem is, as you go from a user to an addict, there are so many other things. The user is going to get behind the wheel of a car and they're going to drive. And that endangers everybody else who's on the road because they're impaired. For meth in particular, especially the manufacturer of meth and meth labs, when your addiction reaches a certain point, as Rachel said, you get a meth psychosis. You're very paranoid. You have visual and audio hallucinations. They see what they call shadow people. And their hallucinations are very similar across the board. When you talk to somebody who comes into treatment or somebody is law enforcement that we have been dealing with that maybe is under arrest, when they discuss their use and their response to the use, it's very similar across the board. With many of these addicts, their focus then becomes the drug and where are they going to get their next fix? When are they going to be able to cook their next batch of meth? And so the responsibilities with work, with family, raising their children, putting food on the table, all of those become secondary and tertiary to just simply having the drug and getting their next high or their next fix.
We've gotten a call from a listener who didn't want to go on the air asking a pretty good question. How do you identify bath salts? I mean, what do they look like? How do you know it? And I'm guessing this is someone who might be a parent wants to know if Junior is using. Tammy, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, him or her, whoever this is.
I don't know. So
it is amazing what you can find out through Google, because bath salts will come in almost every color, but it will look like a salt type substance, like a larger kosher salt sometimes. Mm-hmm. It can also be in a powder form, though. It will be in some type of powder or salt form, though, and it may be in several colors. The packages may be see-through, and that's what's so dangerous about these substances. Like Rachel said, we have no idea what's in there. We don't know what they've used to add the coloring. We don't know what hardening substance they've used, what process this has gone through. but they call it bath salts because it does resemble a salt-type substance. It can be crushed.
How did it get the name, then, bath salts?
You know, I have no idea.
Anybody have
I think it was so it could be sold and not and could go under the radar as being an illegal or a drug. If you put bath salts not for human consumption, you can sell it over the counter and it's fine.
What's and if you label it anything that is a food, beverage, or a cosmetic, you have to go through the FDA, and there are so many guidelines you have to meet, and you have to list several things on there.
We are talking about current illegal drug trends here on No Limits. My guests are Nikki Crawford with the Indiana State Police, Tammy Watson, also with the Indiana State Police, and Rachel Botkin, who is with Fairbanks Hospital and is a nurse practitioner. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about current illegal drug trends. My guests are Nikki Crawford, first sergeant with the Indiana State Police, Tammy Watson, who is a trooper with the Indiana State Police, and Rachel Botkin, who is with Fairbanks Hospital and is a nurse practitioner. Caller, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, hello.
Hi. Understand you don't want to be identified. I want to emphasize the audience. I normally try to call people by their names, but your preference. Okay, what your question, please.
Yeah, my question is, in the area of marijuana, and, you know, we have other states in the United States that are legalizing it, and I was wondering what the panel's thoughts might be on, you know, maybe some positive impacts or negative impacts we could see in marijuana, and then how it could affect, you know, the use of other drugs. You know, maybe people would substitute, you know, maybe something we're doing for marijuana instead. You know, maybe kind of what, you know, what they think about Indiana becoming legal there.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call. Well, and as a backdrop, there was some consideration in the Indiana state legislature. A couple of senators said we ought to start talking about this. Previous head of the Indiana State Police actually said maybe something we should think about. Tammy, I'll throw that one to you since you deal with the legislature.
You know, we do have some legislators that would like to see that happen. I don't think that topic is going to go away in Indiana. Where you stand on that topic is going to depend on a lot of different issues. I don't think we're anywhere close after dealing with several of our legislators, senators, representatives, and citizens. I don't think Indiana is anywhere close to making that decision positively. Like I said, the argument's not going to go away. It's out there. It definitely is. But in my opinion, from an enforcement side, if you want to smoke marijuana, you're already smoking marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Is there, and we'll skip beyond the sort of legislative piece of this and go to what the caller's question was. Would there be some benefit to this and presumably some cost to doing it? Rachel, would legalizing marijuana make sense? I'll start with you from a health perspective.
Here's the issue with people who smoke marijuana who also have other substance abuse problems is it lowers they call it the gateway drug for a reason. It lowers your inhibitions. And then if you're in recovery smoking marijuana, you're going to go back to your drug of choice. I mean, you're going to go back to using. It's not going to, people act like it's not a big deal, but it is, because it opens you up. If you're into doing Vicodin or heroin, you're going to go back to that if you're still smoking marijuana. You're not clean, and legalizing it isn't really going to do a whole lot for that. I mean, it's just not.
Nikki, I'll let you weigh in as well, since we've let everybody else have a whack at this one.
You know, it's a difficult topic, but I will tell you this. I've never worked a marijuana case that started with methamphetamine. I've never worked a methamphetamine case that didn't start with marijuana.
So, and that's sort of Rachel's point, that it does lead to other things. We are talking about current illegal drug trends here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Have Dr. Richard Feldman on the line. Dr. Feldman, how are you?
I'm good, John. It's been a long time.
It has indeed. It has indeed. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't know. I was involved in the pseudoephedrine bill at the legislature, and I haven't heard the rest of the prior conversation on air today, but I represented the State Medical Association, the Indiana Academy of Family Physicians, and the American Osteopathic Association with this bill in the legislature, and we were opposed to making pseudoephedrine a prescription drug. We were successful in supporting a bill that further limited the amount that an individual can get per month and year, which we felt was a very reasonable, rational approach to a significant problem in this state as well as other states. We just felt that this is a law enforcement issue. It should stay within law enforcement, and it's not a medical issue. And there are so many individuals in around the country, matter of fact, 15 million people, and that I think that translates into about 450,000 patients in Indiana that use this every year.
We didn't want to overburden
those patients for the sake of a law enforcement issue.
We have not talked about the pseudoephedrine bill yet on the show. I know that that was an issue. We've talked about the meth labs and the connection there. So I'll ask either Nikki or Tammy to bring us up to date on what the pseudoephedrine bill was or attempted to do, so we can have a discussion about that.
There's a couple different parts to it. Mm-hmm. The first part goes into effect July 1st. The second part goes into effect January 1st of 2014. What it did is it put an annual limit on the purchase of pseudoephedrine to 61.2 grams, which equates to 8.5 months worth of product that you can buy without a prescription. If you've had a conviction for specific meth-related offenses, most being dealing, possession of precursors, those things related to the manufacture of meth, it requires that if you possess that for 7 years after your conviction, you're not allowed to possess pseudoephedrine without a prescription. There are other tracking things that were worked in there in terms of tracking the convenience packs, which are the small individual dosage packs. That's going to be required starting the first of next year. But that's pretty much the gist of what that bill did.
Okay. And what parts, are there parts of that, Dr. Feldman, I presume you're speaking on behalf of the medical association?
Yeah, I speak on behalf of the entire medical community.
Okay. What parts of that bill did you object to?
Well, we didn't object to anything that passed. We supported this bill. What we were trying to do was avoid a prescription-only bill. And we were concerned about our patients, the many patients that use this. This is a very safe medication when used as prescribed. Hence, it's a non-prescription drug. We understand the meth problem. We understand it's a precursor for creating meth. But, you know, there are so many patients on this. And to make it a prescription drug, you add to the cost of medical care for these people, a lot of inconvenience, the cost of a doctor's visit, time away from work, child care, the increased cost of a prescription drug. And physicians, if this is a controlled substance now, physicians cannot just call in a prescription. That would be a violation, a general violation of your medical license. You have to see the patient. So we're going to be bringing and flooding the an already overburdened medical system with patients seeking really a routine over-the-counter medication. So that was one of the major issues. I know that I wrote in my editorial column in the Star, I devoted one of my columns to this issue and outlined my views, which was consistent with the rest of the medical community. But, you know, one of the major points that I made was that take a look at narcotic opiates, prescription drugs, pain pills, opiate pain pills. It's the easiest prescription drug to get on the street. And I know that very well because I until recently, did all the outpatient detoxification for St. Franciscan St. Francis Health, St. Francis Hospital. And that's all we saw. It was opiate narcotics. And it's so easy to get on the street. And as you know, opiate narcotic pain pills are highly regulated. They are prescription. As a matter of fact, it's a special prescription pad that you have to use. And if that's so easy to get on the street, if it's so easy to divert, the same thing's going to happen with pseudoephedrine. So I don't think making it a prescription is the answer.
Let me just ask, was that a priority? Was that something that the law enforcement community wanted? Was for it to be made prescription, Tammy?
No, the Indiana State Police did not support a prescription-only bill.
You did not?
No.
Okay. Well, Dr. Feldman, I'd like to thank you very much for calling and look forward to talking with you again. Thanks very much for the call.
All time. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Well, in terms of what is the big challenge, because we seem to keep coming back to the meth labs, you know, Nikki established, and I think everybody's in agreement that that was drug problem number one here in the state. What is the biggest problem? Why are they so hard to contain or control? I'll throw that one to Nikki.
Because pseudoephedrine is so readily accessible. Basically, what we have done is we have allowed drug addicts and manufacturers to be in control of their own destiny. They can go out to whatever store they need to go to and get all the items they need to manufacture meth, and everything they do up until the point they start making the drug is basically legal. They've legally purchased pseudoephedrine for the wrong reason, yes, but it's still a legal activity until we can prove otherwise. So, you know, it's in terms of what we deal with in the big picture, when it comes to pseudoephedrine, that's the key precursor ingredient that you have to manufacture the drug. And, you know, as difficult as it is to weigh one thing against the other, that's the primary thing we look at. Every other ingredient that you use to manufacture is interchangeable with one solvent to another or one basic or acid substance to another.
Does it create a problem also? I mean, it sounds like we've got some systems in place here in Indiana to make sure that, you know, unless I have just constant colds or whatever, there's going to be a real limit to the amount of pseudoephedrine I'm going to be able to get hold of. Is anything in place, though, to prevent me from, say, getting my 8.5 month supply and then driving to Illinois or Michigan or Kentucky?
There's a nationwide tracking system that is in place in Indiana that is also in place in all of our neighboring states, as well as, I believe, half of the states in the country. And it's one database that's used by everybody, so you can track somebody's purchases basically from Indiana across the country.
We've gotten a listener question, caller who didn't want to go on the air, who says, why isn't anyone talking about secondhand smoking from marijuana and its effects? I think that would be a natural one for you, Rachel.
Secondhand smoke from marijuana, we actually don't talk a lot about that at Fairbanks either. We talk about tobacco. Same kind of effects, though. You're still getting the some of the toxins from the marijuana. There is a such thing as a contact buzz. You can get some of the bad side effects from the marijuana use, euphoria, all that, those bad things. Not a huge topic of discussion, like I said. We focus a lot more on some of the other things.
Is there a law enforcement component? Are you, if somebody's smoking marijuana in your presence and, you know, you get the kind of contact high, are you still subject to the same penalties?
I think the biggest situation that that would impact would be an impaired driving situation. So teenagers do what they call hotboxing. And
please explain that.
I was going to go into that. In their car, they'll light up a joint, mm-hmm. and they'll roll all the windows up and turn any of the air conditioning or the heating unit off so that all the air stays within the car.
On a day like today, that could get pretty uncomfortable.
It could be bad for them, but they're teenagers, right?
Yeah.
And they call that hotboxing because all the air, all the marijuana, the secondhand smoke, and the original smoke from the joint stays within the car. And even though there's only one joint, everyone gets not only a contact buzz, but they can get pretty impaired from that. And that's when we would see it most, is in a driving situation where we would come in to contact with someone that was impaired.
We are talking about current illegal drug trends here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Jay, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir, for taking my call.
Oh, certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I just would like to make a comment. I got married about 8 years ago, and when I married my wife, she was a casual marijuana user. I'm a commercial motor vehicle driver. I don't approve of that, but I love my wife. Well, when she finally got into this spice thing, which I was totally unaware that she was even doing it, then in Michigan, when they ban it, our life together spiraled out of control. I had no idea, actually, what was going on. I thought she was only smoking marijuana. The addiction that stuff caused, like I say, destroyed our marriage, destroyed our life. She spent over $10,000 in 1 year on spice alone. And I didn't even have a clue that that's what she was doing. But like I say, I have to agree with you, your guest there, that what she said, you know, she's never interviewed somebody who's got a meth problem, you know, that started out with this, or, you know, started out with something different. It is all a gateway drug. Anything you do always leads to more.
Thanks very much for the call, Jay, and I'm sorry about your troubles. Well, Rachel, I'm assuming that's a fairly common story that
it
you
is,
hear in
yes.
your work.
For sure. We get a lot of people who their drug use ruins their lives. They go into financial ruin. They ruin their marriages. They basically lose their jobs. They lose their life to addiction. So what we do at Fairbanks is try to help them get that back.
I've asked you kind of the treatment question mm-hmm. for people. What do you say to someone like Jay, though, who there's someone, you know, it's obvious, you listen to the guy.
Yes.
It sounds like they're divorced, but he still cares a great deal.
Right.
What do you say to someone like that when you see someone, you know, that you care about whose life is spiraling out?
Sure. You know what, we always tell them there's hope. And if you notice that you think somebody, you start seeing the behavioral signs of addiction, you know, they're missing deadlines, they're not going to work or school, poor performance, poor hygiene, they're sort of moody, things like that. The first thing you can do is talk to them. Don't talk to them while they're under the influence. Talk to them while they're sober if you can. And let them know that you care. Don't act angry, because that's just going to create a lot of discord between you two. Let them know you care. Talk to them. And then the next thing you can do is, if they're willing, they have to be willing, is to get a professional assessment. You can go to your primary care doctor, or you can come to Fairbanks, and we will do assessments and decide what the
best course is. Is there a cost to doing an assessment?
Usually assessments are free. You come in, and like if you come to a Fairbanks, you come in through our intake, and they will interview you and find out your substance abuse history, and then decide, like, what kind of treatment do you need? Do you need inpatient? Do you need outpatient? And then kind of go from there.
And in terms of, you mentioned missing deadlines, are there other symptoms if you're, you know, in Jay's case, it was complicated because he clearly was on the road and
right.
away for a while. Are there certain things you should look for?
Obviously, the missing deadlines, like I said, the more secretive behaviors, missing money, things like that. Like, you think that something is paid, but it's not, or you thought you had this much, but it's not there, or you notice that their hygiene is gone, or they're losing weight for no reason, things like that. A lot of it has to do with personal appearance and things that they're doing in their life.
We are talking about current illegal drug trends here on No Limits. My guests are Nikki Crawford and Tammy Watson, both of the Indiana State Police, and Rachel Botkin, who is a Fairbanks Hospital nurse practitioner. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about current illegal drug trends. My guests are Nikki Crawford and Tammy Watson, both with the Indiana State Police, and Rachel Botkin, who is a nurse practitioner with Fairbanks Hospital. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going fine. What's on your mind?
I'm a college student, and I come from a family of physicians, so I definitely have a personal experience with prescription drugs and was really interested in the ephedrine legislation that just went through, and I thought it was a great way to keep a balance between having complete security over the distribution of pseudoephedrine and not allowing it to be become a black market like that with OxyContin and various things like that. If we were to have made the mistake and made the prescription necessary. So just wanted to come in and commentate on how great of a legislation this was, and really that's all I have to say.
Thanks very much for the call, Jack. Well, in terms of that, I mean, what we get out of this is it's a balancing act, right? I mean, a lot of these drugs that, as with so many things in life, can be used for either good purposes or bad purposes. I think we all agree that, particularly those of us who do have sinus trouble and all of that, that pseudoephedrine is a useful device, but it can be put to difficult purposes. Are there other drugs like that that we have to monitor closely that are readily available, but that can be used in ways, Rachel, you are nodding your head?
Yeah, a lot of the adolescents use DXM, which is dextromethorphan, which is also a cough medicine. They call it Robotrippin, Skitlin, stuff like that. They will use cough suppressants to get high. So you do need to watch that.
One of the adolescent drugs is Adderall and Ritalin. Mm-hmm. And on a college campus, that's like candy at finals week. But those type drugs are diverted. I worked 3.5 years undercover, and I could buy those any time of the day or week. Those drugs are heavily diverted, and they are often prescribed for the ADHD issue.
Presumably, kids sell their siblings' prescriptions.
Sadly, John, parents sell them also. You know, you may have a child that has a prescription for that never receives that prescription.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Illa, says, as someone who suffers from chronic pain due to degenerative cervical spinal disease, I am prescribed opiate pain meds to control my pain. With more stringent controls and laws being placed on prescribed Schedule II narcotics, it is becoming increasingly difficult and frustrating to obtain these meds legally. I do not take these meds to get high. Without them, I would not be able to continue working and trying to maintain as normal a life as possible while dealing with chronic pain. These new controls require me to see my pain management physician once a month to obtain a paper prescription for these meds, which increases my cost for office visit, as well as increasing the cost to my health insurance company to pay for monthly visits. My health insurance offers by mail pharmacy, which decreases the cost of medications. However, it is not legal to fill these prescriptions by mail order, which in turn costs me more money. To Dr. Feldman, how are these drugs the easiest to obtain on the street when I have to jump through hoops to obtain these legally? Tammy,
I could comment on that a little
please,
bit.
Please, go ahead, Tammy.
You know, unfortunately, in our society right now, there's such a high level of fraud. And for her to go in once a month and get that prescription for that opioid medication is unfortunate for her because it's going to raise some of her costs. But if she were to have a six-month prescription for that and someone were to steal her identity and be able to fraudulently obtain her prescriptions for 3 or 4 months without her knowing it, which happens every day, those costs are being passed on to us all. And that while I don't have an answer financially, the reason that she's having to go in more often is for her own protection, and so that the medical costs don't rise to the point where we can't all not be able to afford it.
We are talking about current illegal drug trends here on No Limits. Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi. A dear friend of mine married an injured veteran, and he has a very large problem on his hands. He is, he's very clearly in pain and unable to work if he's not on his, opioid medications. And then by the same token, he's become terribly addicted to them. He cannot function either way at this point, and when he went to seek an alternative therapy, the cost was just astronomical. And my real concern here, I'm married, I'm a military spouse as well, and I feel like, you're looking into your own future on some level. And I guess my question really is what are the options that are available to pain patients, that are going to significantly, improve their mobility and also, reduce their need for these opioid-type medications.
Rachel, I'm going to throw that one to you. Thank you very much for the call, Karen.
No problem.
There are several non-narcotic ways to control pain, and I just want to make it clear that Fairbanks is a rehab and not pain management. But there are, there are NSAIDs, ibuprofen. I know people kind of shrug their shoulders at those. There's physical therapy. There's other medications out there that we prescribe. There's muscle relaxers. Different ways that you can control pain that don't require the use of opiates. And if pain management is the problem, there are doctors out there who can help you with that. One medication that we do prescribe that is prescribed for pain management is Suboxone.
What's that?
That is an opiate agonist-antagonist that we give for, it's used for two things. It's for opiate addiction and for chronic pain. Less abuse potential in most cases than your standard opiates. But like I said, we like to use medications like Neurontin, ibuprofen, Flexeril, Mobic, heat therapy, physical therapy, things like that to help with pain.
Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going fine. What's on your mind?
I just had a few questions, really. I've recently kind of learned a little bit about something that I guess not many, many people have heard of. It's referred to as DMT, dimethyltryptamine. And
Nikki's nodding her head, so we'll talk about it.
Oh, I was just kind of curious as to the illegalities of it, being that it's something that our body naturally produces at a few different events in our life. How is it that it's something that our body produces, along with being in most plants and animals, be illegal? And how is that controlled?
Thanks very much for the call, Mike. Well, Nikki, I'll let you take a stab at that one.
Well, DMT is an extremely powerful hallucinogen. And we have actually had DMT extraction labs in Indiana that we have processed. While 99% of our labs are methamphetamine labs, we do have other types of labs such as ecstasy, and DMT happens to be one of them. We can sit here. We've sat here and we've talked a lot about opiates. They're naturally occurring. They come from a plant. We've talked about the synthetics that are all made in a lab. They're chemical concoctions that are made up. Many of the items that you have can be made in your body, and just about anything is possible through organic chemistry. You can turn one thing into another thing if you've got enough time, money, and apparatus to do it. But DMT is a controlled substance. It is illegal to manufacture it, and it is extremely dangerous because the dosage level is so small with DMT. And so when we had our DMT extraction lab, we basically fully suited up so that we didn't have any kind of danger of coming in contact with it with our skin. It's not as skin
what
absorbent.
What does it do to people?
It's a hallucinogen, so it makes them, it's kind of like an out-of-body experience. It makes them, you know, have visual hallucinations, some audio hallucinations, so it gives them a different state of being, so to speak, much like LSD or PCP might.
We are talking about illegal drug trends here on No Limits. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi. I just want to state my bias firsthand, I guess, that I'm a pro-marijuana proponent, although I don't use it because it's legal. But I had she brought up about how, as far as meth is concerned, that it's always started with marijuana. I was wondering about looking back even further as far as alcohol being more of a true gateway drug and also hinderer to one's recovery.
Good sure. question. Thanks very much for the call, Sarah.
Thank you.
Well, Rachel, I'll throw that one to you. And Tammy, I noticed you were nodding your head too.
Yeah, alcohol, definitely. It doesn't matter what, if your drug of choice is opiates, you can switch over to anything. Addiction is a brain disease. I mean, it's a chronic disease that affects both your brain and your behavior. It's not curable. It's treatable, but it's kind of like if you have high blood pressure or if you have diabetes. So once you're addicted to one thing, getting addicted to something else is so easy. So if you're an opiate addict and you're like, I can have a beer, that's going to lead you back to your drug of choice, or it's going to lead you to alcohol. And I see this all the time, cross addiction. So alcohol is definitely a gateway drug.
Well, but that would raise the question then, and I guess that I'll anticipate someone else calling in and saying, then why isn't alcohol illegal?
Well, and that's why I started to comment. We say that marijuana is a gateway drug because it is illicit.
Yeah.
Alcohol is a legal substance for those over 21. Mm-hmm. However, every juvenile that I have come in contact with for illegal drug use has always, always started with alcohol.
And is there an argument? I mean, the argument then on the other side is, should we go back to the days of Prohibition?
How Tammy? Did that work out?
Well, I'm asking you. I ask the questions on the show. I don't have to answer them. That's the beauty of the program.
You know, as our legislatures and our lawmakers have determined that alcohol as a legal substance used in moderation has no detrimental effects. And as with anything in life, anything used in excess is going to cause you problems, legal or otherwise.
You know, and I'm not a medical doctor, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. And but, you know, as Tammy said, for anybody under 21, alcohol is an illegal substance.
Yeah,
it's a violation of the law to use it. And there are reasons for that, because as the body and the brain are developing, it can inhibit that development. And so as more medical research comes in, and we know that the brain becomes mature at 25, I believe, is the age where
yes.
they believe that the brain becomes mature.
Well, that's good
then,
to know.
Yeah. Yeah. you've at least gotten to that 21 where you're past all of the major developments that occur as you're a young child.
John, welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going fine. Your question, please.
Yeah, going back to the pseudoephedrine legislation being passed, I just wanted to express my opinion as a minority resident of Indianapolis. I don't see the problem with having it with... Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, first time caller, a little nervous. But I just am saying that the transportation and, like, having to go to the hospital and get a prescription, pay a copay, time off work, time off of work, and, like, if you have children, you have to take the kids off of school and you have to take off work. I don't see the it's too much of a hassle for something that I'm going to have to do maybe once a year or twice a year when I could just pick it up on the way from work, on the way home from work at the drugstore. And something like that. So I guess I'm just against the legislation and want to just keep it the way it is.
Thanks very much for the call, John.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, I probably ought to emphasize here that that there is no law on the books now saying that pseudoephedrine has to have a prescription. that in fact there are limits, and that you can't go out and buy out the entire shelf, but you can just stop on your way home if you've got a sick child or you're sick yourself and pick up some Sudafedrin.
All you have to have is an ID
to pick it up. Now, there is something in place, as I understand it, a system in place so that if you go and buy your supply at one drugstore, and of course now they, as part of their marketing strategies, they tend to put themselves right across the street from each other. There is a system in place so that if you go and buy out the shelf and then try to go across the street and buy it, they'll catch you at that.
There is. That electronic tracking system that we referred to earlier does that. It has the limits set in the system, and you can't go over 3.6 grams in a day, which the pharmaceutical industry packages it so that you can't, in one package, go over. It's got the monthly and the annual limits in it, so it blocks anybody from being able to purchase. Anybody who's using a valid and their own ID, it blocks them from purchasing more than they're supposed to.
We are talking about current illegal drug trends here on No Limits. Bob, welcome to the program.
Yes, I had first about the Sudafedrin. I had a couple of friends long ago in the past. I used to do methamphetamine, and I'm ashamed to say it, but I did. But it was so simple. There's, you know, three or four or five people, and they all go and buy it, and then they throw it together, and next thing you know, they got a pile, you know. So, I mean, it's not – they definitely need some kind of law to get that slowed down because it's just too simple. But my main question was, I have a problem with my wife, and I don't know how to deal with it. We just got out of the hospital 3-4 weeks ago, and she's been diagnosed with a real bad case of cirrhosis of the liver. And, you know, we've partied hard in our life, but she's at the point now, she's got a bad disease, and I just don't know how to deal with it anymore because I'm the only one working, and I need some kind of guidance to try to get her help. And she's in denial right now, and so I'm running out of options.
We're getting close on time, so I don't mean to cut you off, Bob, but I'm going to get that to Rachel right away. Thank you very much for the call, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
Rachel.
Sorry to hear about your wife and her health. The best thing you can do, like I said, is try to talk to her. You can always bring her in for an assessment, and we can try to treat her. It depends how far her liver is, how bad it is. But you can bring her in for an assessment, and we can certainly see if she's willing to do treatment. And like I said, show her that you care. Expect some, like I said, some anger from her. But the best thing you can do is show her that you care. Let her know that you think she has a problem, and bring her in.
How do you structure that? That sit down where you say, and I know I'm asking this at the worst possible time.
It's okay.
We're ready to run out of time. How do we start how do you start a conversation where you're saying, in effect, honey, I think you got a problem?
Just come at her as, you know, I'm your husband. I love you. There's also support groups for family members. You can go to Al-Anon, things like that. Just say, I'm your husband. I love you. You're deathly ill. I need you to please take a look at this and see that you're not only affecting yourself, you're affecting me, and you're affecting our other family members. And can you please consider getting help?
I'd like to thank you all for spending this time with us. Judging from the number of calls and questions we got to have you back at some point, and I hope you all will come. We will be back next week. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.